Blog Talk Radio.
I didn't realize, one of the things that was kind of interesting is that when you sent the blast out, it said parish, that there were 14-plus parishes in Jamaica. And that's kind of how they refer to the various districts in Louisiana as parishes.
Really?
As opposed to...
Hello, hello, hello. It's time to labrish. We're live. Get onto the shady tree. Out of the heat. No problem, man. Time to chill. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Backyard. This is your host, Marguerite Marshall, and I want to just welcome you on this wonderful Wednesday afternoon. We are here each week at 8 o'clock. We're here in The Backyard. We labrish, and the labrish usually is about the Jamaica that most of the seniors knew in the 30s, 40s, and 50s. We're here each week to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And tonight, as most Jamaicans that are active in their ethnic communities with other Jamaicans, we'll know that we're approaching the 49th anniversary of independence. And I just thought it would be a good time to go way back to the beginning of when the island was really not even known. So tonight we're going to have some information, little known information, about early Jamaica, featuring, of course, Spanish Town, because a lot of people may not realize, especially the visitors who just visit the island, or even some of the natives who live there, or those of us who were schooled in the old days when we did not get enough information about the island itself. We had a lot of history about how it was colonized and who discovered it and all the wars that were fought and things like that, but not a lot of details. So this, on this platform, it is my hope, with the help of several of our very dedicated historians, who incidentally all happen to be women. Tonight I'll be reading some excerpts from Pieces of the Past that was put together by Dr. Rebecca Tortello, and it is online for the people who want to really find out a lot about the old Jamaica during, you know, the old days. And also I will be taking excerpts from the Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage by Olive Senior, and we'll be having our sidebars as usual. So if you're on the board or if you're online, you'll have to call in at 718-766-4558. If you're listening on your telephone, just hit 1 on your telephone and I will see a raised hand and I will be more than happy to welcome you to the Labrish. So without any further ado, I want to give you a little of Dr. Tor Taylor's article. And it starts off saying, in 1509, 5 years after being marooned for 347 days in the northeastern town of Sevilla La Nueva, what is now known as St. Anne's Bay, Christopher Columbus bequeathed Jamaica to his heirs. Now, just check that out. There were people there. However, when he discovered the island, he says, well, okay, it's mine. I'm just going to give it away to my heirs. Okay. So back to her article, for some 30 years, early Spanish colonists settled in or near St. Anne's Bay until they realized that these locations were plagued by swamps. They looked south to a town on a wide, fertile plain, a town they named Villa de la Vega, Town of the Plain, that's what it means in English, now known as Spanish Town. It was founded in 1534 and became the capital in 1538. Whoa. Having been a Taino settlement beginning close to 500 A.D. and subsequently the seat of Spanish and British colonial governments for some 333 years. Wow. Spanish Town is the oldest continuously occupied city in the Western Hemisphere. Its history is largely the history of early Jamaica. And I don't know about my other history friends, but I just find some of that information so enlightening because I lived in Spanish Town when I was quite young, and I know there were some gorgeous buildings already showing signs of decay, but there were beautiful structures. I remember being in awe of them as a child, but never knew that they were so old. I mean, that the legacy of Spanish Town went back that far. So, okay, let me get back to the article here. And remember, folks, this is a Labrish, so whenever you want to be heard or ask a question or make a comment, feel free to raise your hands, and I'll be happy to have you give your sidebar. But I try to make, although this information is all documented and authentic, and I must say, you know, there's a lot of information floating around online. You can post anything or say anything. But I try to make sure that the information that I share is from the historians who have had, you know, they have backups for all the facts that we discuss. And as usual, because I just like to make everything fun, I like to put in my sidebar, as I call them, and sometimes relate it to the now, because I always mention that although as a species, humans, we have evolved and come a long way, there's still some parts that have not changed. And I'll come back to that thought as we are talking about Columbus taking claim to the island that he discovered and then willing it to his heirs. So let's get back to the article. In general, Spanish Town was poor. No, in general, Spanish Jamaica was poor and badly governed. Its economy was based on cow hides and lard. It never prospered and was more of a burden than a benefit to the Spanish. Indeed, Spanish governors were rarely present, and many of the settlers became discouraged and abandoned the island, frustrated that they had no luck finding the gold they so desired. Spanish Town, however, was a good choice for a capital because for the first time since arriving in Jamaica, the Spanish chose a site where the land was good for farming. Spanish Town's proximity to the Rio Cobre was considered important in terms of health, and its closeness to a major waterway, the Kingston Harbor, important in terms of safety. The town's inland location meant an added level of security against invaders, a significant problem in the late 16th and 17th centuries. And as nations sought to weaken Spanish dominance in the region, Jamaicans' main use was as a supply port. In the conquest of Mexico and lands to the south. So I want to break off here. Isn't it interesting to know that Jamaica actually played a part in the Spanish taking over completely Mexico? I didn't even know that. It's back to the article. Its immense agricultural resources and strategic value was unrecognized, and it was left virtually defenseless, its coast often unprotected, making it a prime target for attack. Now, English Lord Proctor Oliver Cromwell was well aware of this fact, and unlike the Spanish, he realized the strategic and political value of the Caribbean islands, particularly Jamaica, which, with its location close to Central and South America, was to Cromwell a dagger pointed at Spain's soft underbelly. Now, I want to take a break there to talk about strategy. Now, here is the Spanish. The island is not really a big deal in terms of agriculture or anything. People are abandoning it. It's not well governed. But because of its strategic location, now, here is the enemy, Mr. Cromwell, an Englishman, sizing things up to do his thing. So just like how some people will check things out and make sure that they have the leading edge before they make a move or attack, like we know we are exposed to that now in some of our societies, people will check out a neighborhood before they do something bad in it. So I'm just saying it's the same things happening now in different ways and different forms. And I just think it is quite enlightening how the human mind works. All right. So we know now that Jamaica was important in the Spanish conquering Mexico and South America because of it was used as a supply port. Now, here we come now. Here comes the British. On the morning of May 10, 1655, two Spanish fishermen said to be out searching for turtles off Port Morant looked up and in shock saw a fleet of 38 ships with large cannons moving towards them. The British had arrived. Turtles forgotten. The fishermen spread the word, and messengers set off for Villa de la Vega to warn the settlers. Close to 9,000 men were said to have disembarked from those 38 ships. Some 3,000 more than the actual population of the island at the time. So that is what I call overpowering. The capital city fell within days. Yet when the British realized that many Spaniards had fled to Cuba, taking their valuables with them, they burned many buildings in anger. Much of Spanish Town was later rebuilt, but during the time Port Royal acted as an unofficial capital, and the pirates based there protected the island from invasion until the devastating 1962 earthquakes. So at this point, I know we discussed the earthquakes and when we did Discover Jamaica one parish at a time, and I thought that was an interesting story of what happened then. But now I want to ask anyone on the board that want to join me to join the Labrish by putting your hands up. If not, I'm going to continue reading and hope that you're enjoying it as much as I am. And I must tell you that, you know, I research and find and make a copy sometimes so I can read it, but I don't really get the details until I'm sharing it with you. So I'm being enlightened as much as you are. And as usual, I'm just tickled pink of how I can relate it to, first of all, I'm just mesmerized by when you talk about 330 years, my little island have been occupied by people, just people, whether they're oppressors, colonizers, Indians, just people. And, you know, everything is still so, not everything, but a lot of things are still so lush and beautiful and, you know, growing and springing, and it's just wonderful. So let's get back to what was happening then. From the 1500s to early 1600s, Spanish Town remained such by the British, was the only settled town in Jamaica. It's really the first settled town in Jamaica. It remained the capital under the British until 1872, when the young city of Kingston assumed the honor. In 1670, after years of war with Spain, Jamaica was officially given to Britain by the Treaty of Madrid. And I remember hearing that the treaty was signed in Madrid and delivered to who. And I remember when I visited how interesting Madrid was. So in other words, we were almost Spanish, right? Okay, so let's get back. The checkerboard plan the Spanish Town adopted in 1534 still largely influences the layout of the town today. The original Spanish plaza was located near to where the Anglican Cathedral now stands, and slightly to the north, where the ruins of Old King's House now stands, was the British governor's house. Under the British, the square was rebuilt in the mid-1700s following a grid-like plan by John Picayune, and was repeated with Georgian architecture. It is now considered one of the world's finest Georgian square. I am not sure, I've not been to Spanish Town recently, and I'm not sure if the square is still standing, and if it's in good, the structure is still sound. I have no idea. So I'd like to ask if anyone on the board knows what's going on there now, if they would share it with the rest of the world. Because it was, it said, I don't know when this article was written by Dr. Tortella, but it says it is now considered one of the world's finest Georgian squares. For some 180 years, Spanish Town Square was the home of the British colony seat of government, the parish council and the House of Assembly, the island's archives. I think it still has the archives now, the Supreme Court, and the first King's House, residence of many colonial governors. Built in the mid-1700s and burnt in a fire in 1925. Huh, that was all after my mother was born. So they tell you how it was made. I don't think you're interested in that. King's House and all the remains, I suppose, is still there, the relics. In 1838, the proclamation of the abolition of slavery was read from the steps of King's House. King's House is also linked with a number of secret underground passages that many now say existed for drainage purposes. Only story holds that a passage connected King's one story holds that a passage connected King's House with the Assembly, another connected it with the river. So that is from a publication by Black in 1960, who must have been the author of whatever they were quoting from. In the 18th century, Spanish Town was a hub of activity. It is where, in 1720, the pirate Calico Jack, who courted the notorious female pirate Anne Bonny and Mary Read among his crew, was tried and convicted. We did a story on that too called The Female Pirates of the Caribbean. So if anyone would like to hear that entertaining story, of how they, dressed up as men and all that stuff, they can find it in the archives of the Blog Talk Radio, on the Blog Talk Radio website. If you just look to the right, you will see all the shows are saved according to how they were done each month. So if you just, I think there's a search bar that you could search for that particular show and get to it fast. But that's a very intriguing story. Let's get back here. In 1773, Lewis Hutchison, the Mad Master of Edinburgh Castle, said to have tortured and killed visitors to his area of the island, was hung. He was hung in Spanish Town. In that year, we did a story on that too. I don't know if any of our listeners on the board remember those stories. In 1725, the Maroon Treaty that recognized the Maroons as the first people of African heritage in the New World was signed. In 1780, a group of armed Maroons marched holding the head of the bandit Three Finger Jack aloft to claim a $300 reward. I haven't done a story on that yet. They beheaded him. Wow. Paul Bogle marched in vain to meet with Governor Erie to explain the plight of the peasants who would go on to riot under his leadership in what is now known as the Morant Bay Rebellion in 1865. That has nothing to do with what I read before about the Three Finger Jack. This is a separate blurb. It was also the seat of entertainment and the location of numerous balls and concerts. All new governors were feted in style and then required to repay the colony by holding open houses during the sitting of the assembly, a practice about which pirate turned governor Henry Morgan complained cost him some $1,000. All distinguished visitors to the island were brought to Spanish Town, among them Horatio Nelson. Captain Bligh, known for having survived a mutiny amongst his crew and for having brought the breadfruit, among other plants and fruits, to Jamaica. These are all people who were known to visit Spanish Town. And incidentally, I must say right now, because I know this is a fact, that most of the very successful movies, Pirates of the Caribbean, are based on stories of that period. And, of course, they're the island of Jamaica. So, you know, we are so, we have the island, it's people and the culture have really, really made a significant impact on the entire planet. Not just one country, but the entire planet. Because if you think of all the things that I've covered even just so far, even just from the movie base of those, you know, Caribbean, of the Pirates of the Caribbean and the popularity of that series. You know, people all over the world know about that period and Jamaica. So let's get back here. Admiral Rodney, for whom a statue now stands on the north side of Spanish Town Square, was also a distinguished visitor. So Spanish Town was quite royal and elegant and, I suppose, stuffy. The memorial designed by the famous English sculptor John Bacon in 1801 commemorates Rodney's victory over a French fleet that had attempted to invade the island in 1782. Rodney is portrayed to resemble a Roman emperor and tell the story of a battle and the cannon, they're talking about the statue, I suppose, on either side were taken from the French flagship. A tavern dating from Spanish time, which is said to have also been where the mules and horses belonging to the Spanish governor were tethered and demolished to make way for the statue. In other words, they had to get rid of that place just to put up Rodney's statue. How cool. Architecturally, Spanish Town remains a national treasure. Near the town's entrance stand the oldest iron bridge of its kind in the Western Hemisphere. Cast in England, it was erected in 1801 at a cost of 4,000, I suppose, European pounds, or English pounds, I guess. On the eastern side of the square, where the assembly used to be, is now housed the office of the St. Catherine Parish Council. The original House of Assembly was built in 1762. On the south side of the square stand the burned remains of the former courthouse, built in 1819, the victim of a 1986 fire. That's quite recent. It is believed that on this site once stood the Spanish Church of the White Cross, said to have been connected by an underground passage to a monastery on nearby Monk Street. Also nearby on Barrack Street lie the remains of military barracks erected in 1791 to house both soldiers and officers. A large underground passage has been discovered there. although its origin and purpose remains elusive. So we don't know what that was all about. Now, east of the square on Red Church Street, and I hope there's some Spanishtonians getting a little bit of this history, whether you come by later or you're on the listening online or on the board now, I hope you find this interesting. So let me get back here. East of the square on Red Church Street stands the Anglican Cathedral on the side of the Spanish Chapel of the Red Cross, which was destroyed by Cromwell's soldiers. It's funny how when people go in, they can destroy beautiful buildings just because of rage. You know, it's still happening. It's still happening. We read about invasions and then people, you know, plundering things that have been there for generations. It's happening in our time. And it goes back to my point that in some ways, as humans, we have not really changed a lot. So, let me just give you a little bit more about Dr. Tortella's piece. And then I picked up a couple of little gems, bullets from the Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage that I would like to share. And again, let me just take a break to say you're listening to Backyard Labrish on Blog Talk Radio. We're here each week at 8 o'clock where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the very rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. And tonight we're discussing the early Jamaica and the city of Spanishtown, which is the oldest city on the island and perhaps for a lot of other places other than Jamaica. So, the history of Spanishtown lives on in the remnants of the old buildings that harken back to the days gone and in its street names that mark it as the island's overall history, really. Microcosm of the island's overall history, which means the Spanish part of our history, because it has a lot of Spanish names, I suppose, and the streets, and just how the square is set out. Reminders of the Spanish in Jamaica includes Red Church and White Church streets, symbolic of the Spanish chapels of the Red and White Cross, as well as Monk Street in reference to the monastery that once stood nearby. Nugent Street and Manchester Street are named for British colonial governors, while King Street is so named as it runs past King's House, and Constitution Street, near to the square, refers to the fact that the island's administrative center used to be located there. So, with that said, that closes Dr. Tortella's documented record of Spanishtown, which she has researched, and she has the sources that she has got most of this information from. So I just want to take this opportunity to encourage perhaps parents of children who are Jamaicans or Jabrits or Jacans, as I call them, which would be born in any other country but of Jamaican parents, and they might just have an interest in some of the old history of Jamaica, that pieces of the past and other such type of publications are really great material because they're authentic. And they're written, they're easy to read. Well, I stumble through them, but you know what I mean. They're easy to read and understand, and they can be fun. So I encourage you to share both Blog Talk Radio and the fact that this information is online. As a matter of fact, I think Pieces of the Past, a collection of the articles, was made into a book, and it should be available on Amazon. So now I'm going to give you some excerpts from Encyclopedia of Jamaican Heritage by Olive Senior. And again, I want to ask any listener on the board who might want to join us to raise your hand. One of the things I thought that was jumped out at me here is she says, and this is on the Spanish Jamaica, and this book is put together just like an encyclopedia would. You go to the front and it will tell you where the S's start, and you flick through. And this is events, culture, and all of that. So Jamaica was a settled Spanish colony for 146 years. 146 years. Can you imagine that? And it was, let me read you a little bit more here. Can you imagine the bananas and all of that? There was not any plantation there. So certainly it was not what you would call prosperous, I suppose. So it wasn't not considered a big deal by the Spanish. It's really the British that brought it, of course, because of the fertility of the land and their access to slave labor that made it a very prosperous and profitable place to them, not just for the strategic location, but otherwise. But she mentioned here that although the colonists opened trails across the island, most of their settlements and ranches were on the south side in present-day St. Thomas Parish, particularly at Yalas and Ligony and Clarendon Plains in the Black River area, and in Westmoreland near present-day Bluefields. So what I think happened is that, just like I suppose he in any country, that when people have an objective, whether they're going to be planting or trading or whatever it is that they plan to do to make their livelihood, they would think of a location that supports whatever it is that they were doing. So if they were traders and they needed to trade with each other, then they needed to be in a location where there quite a few other people were. If they were raising cattle or planting on a plantation, they don't necessarily need that. They need laborers and they need, you know, irrigation and different things. And my point is that whatever you are doing, whether you're young or old, you got to know what your objective is and make a plan. You know, what is most suited to support whatever it is you plan to do. And as I mentioned, I try to use even history to, or old history, to see points that can apply to us now, how we can enhance our lives or other people's lives, or if we have a passion for something, how we can make that passion grow. Because back to Cromwell now, he had a plan. He knew that the Spanish were not doing what they were supposed to do in guarding this place that they had captured. They captured it, you know, it's theirs. And they were just not taking care of the job. So he says, now, hey, this is going to be easy prey for me. So when they were invaded, I'm sure he had a good estimate of how many people were there. So he'd take more than the population. So it would be easy. So here's my point. Once you know what your objective is, and you have a plan, you should make sure that you reinforce that plan. And you have perhaps a few plans so that, you know, you can sort of shore up your victory. But I just want to end this by saying I hope that, especially the next generation, because one of my objectives of doing this show and using this platform of Blog Talk Radio and just the internet in general is the fact that, as they say now, things are in the cloud, and the cloud will always be there. So if you want to join us and give your opinion on something, as long as it celebrates, enlightens, and preserves, I'd be happy to have you as my guest. If you know of someone who has a story, especially if they grew up in another period, there's a lot of information now about the Now Jamaica. The journalist and host of other shows are doing a marvelous job of keeping people informed and, you know, having people participate. I don't know if there are any other shows that are sort of geared to what we do here in the backyard, which is perhaps the Jamaica before independence, because that's the Jamaica I grew up in, and I am just happy to bring information about the history and things that were, whether they were positive or negative at the time, but we can find some things positive about them. I like, you know, history is history. It was what it was. It is what it is. We are making history today in our lives. You know, generations, 20, 50 years from this will be reading about us. Some people will be making up story about us. But what I think will be the coolest is when 50 years from now, people can actually hear our own stories. And that is my passion for Blog Talk Radio and Backyard Lavish. So I hope you will continue to support me. I see we have a lot of silent listeners tonight. And those listening online, I thank you for being there. And I hope you will continue to support the Labrish. And please send me suggestions of what you would like to hear, as long as it fits into our theme. I am more than happy to research it and share it. So if I don't have any participation, let me see if I have anything more from Olive, Miss Olive Senior, that might not have been in the article that I shared with you. So I am going to put on Ken, and incidentally, our little calypso music we have as our background each before we start is by Kevin MacLeod. And he's going to be with you for a couple of minutes while I check this article out. Let me see some hands when I come back. So here we go. And I'm still trying to learn my sophisticated keyboard. So let's see if I can play this little thingy here. No, nothing happening. Oh, here it comes. There we go. Just chill. Okay, I'm back. I noticed that you mentioned that, remember I mentioned earlier that Columbus decided to, hold on, let me cut this off. Mr. Columbus put up his flag, discovered the island, figured it was his, he could will it to his ears, and they certainly occupied it. I see here where it went from one son to the next son and different members of the family. And it said here, by the terms of the agreement, the Colon family was not allowed to put up fortification, and the coast was infested with smugglers and buccaneers. So apparently, they, the family that it was, you know, willed to, were not allowed to put to fortify the island. So the smugglers and buccaneers took over. It was a free for all. The island had few men to defend it, perhaps never more than 500. And even the capital of Spanish Town was plundered by sea rovers several times. It was easily taken by Cromwell's English forces, of course, we heard that before. And the surviving Spaniards were shipped off to nearby Spanish colonies, leaving behind some former slaves and guerrillas. See, whatever they call that. I suppose they were not slaves. They were called guerrillas. As well as some settlers who revealed themselves to be Jews and were allowed to remain. And I remember doing a show that stated that the Jews were the first settlers, other than the, you know, the Spanish discovered and owned, but the Jews were the first settlers in Jamaica. Interesting. And here it mentioned again that after the British took over, they were allowed to remain, and the other Spanish people who were, I suppose, prisoners of war were shipped to other Spanish island because they couldn't keep them on the island. They had nothing to feed them, and I suppose they still had rules on captured prisoners of war, so they couldn't kill them, I suppose. The English soldiers destroyed many of the Spanish buildings, but the English settlers rebuilt on Spanish foundation. For instance, the surroundings, the Spanish Town Square, which we heard that already. But I thought it interesting that they mentioned, you know, how the people dispersed or what they did with them. So that was a little sidebar I just found in Olive Senior's Encyclopedia of Jamaican Culture. Now, still alive in the memory of Spanish coins. I suppose there's still some Spanish coins floating around. They might have some in the museums, I think. There is some, it mentioned here, some Spanish coins that are in the museum from that period. Legends of Spanish treasures in gold. So there were always some stories about gold being there, and that's why some of the settlers came. And there is still some words that, according to Olive Senior, you know, words in our dialect that is still Spanish, you know, what has Spanish origins. Interesting. As a color word. Yeah. So it's really, when we say diverse, Jamaica is really a very, very diverse country, and its history goes back of diversity. And the reason for the diversity, I think, is so interesting. So we know for sure that the Jews were the first, very first settlers when it was Spanish. The most important legacy remains the animals and the economy. plants and the Spanish that the plant has induced that have continued to be of great significance to Jamaica's economy. Among them, all the domestic animals and major crops such as banana, sugarcane, and citrus. The Spaniards also brought the Roman Catholic faith that did not become prominent again under English rule until 1792. And if my loyal listener is on the board, I'm sure that he's aware of that, but I wasn't. Although there were a Roman Catholic chapel in Port Royal until 1892, the Spanish settlers also included members of the Jewish faith called Marianos, Marinos, I suppose, or Portugals, which is where they came from. They worshipped secretly, and the Jews worshipped secretly, and remained after the English takeover, making Judaism the oldest religion practiced continuously on the island. So that is another fact that we learned, because there are still practicing Jews there. Spanish America. Over time, especially in the 19th and 20th century, Jamaica's Spanish connection continued to be mainly with Latin America. First, through trade with the Spanish American colonies, later with the contact established by tens of thousands of wage laborers, professionals, and business people who immigrated to Latin American countries in search of work and opportunities. See Colon and Panama. With the establishment from the 19th century of a strong Roman Catholic presence in Jamaica, it was also the practice for many years for wealthy Latin American families to send their children to Catholic boarding schools in the island. Jamaica has also had varied connection over many centuries with Spanish-speaking Cubans, its nearest neighbor. So that was an interesting little tidbit that I never read before. Very interesting. Spanish Town was weakly defended and easily taken when the British arrived. Yes, well, we know that. Very interesting. Well, folks, if there are no callers on the board that want to share, I do hope that you enjoyed our little... here's something else I want to share before we go. Spanish Town boasted one of the earliest newspapers, the San Diego de la Vega Gazette, published by William Daniel, who, like other journeymen in the newly developed print shop in the West Indies, was trained at the printery of the famous American Benjamin Franklin in Philadelphia. Wow, I didn't know that. So Spanish Town had the first printery. However, Kingston, which was established after the 1692 earthquake destroyed Port Royal, was the great mercantile center, and Kingstonians enviously sought to have their city become the capital. So in 1755, the merchants curry favored. I didn't even know that was a term. We always talk about curry favor, huh? Was with the governor, Sir Charles Knowles, who persuaded him to force a bill through the legislature for the removal of the capital to Kingston. As soon as the bill was passed, the archives were taken there. The people of Spanish Town lodged a swift protest with the King of England, and Knowles was replaced by Sir Henry Moore. The bill was eventually proclaimed illegal, since the king had not given his agreement, and in 1758, the archives were loaded up on 30 heavily armed wagons and tumbled back to Spanish Town. Ooh, so I didn't even know that it was moved at once. One overturned and was lost in the swamp at Ferry. Ooh. The jubilant citizens greeted the wagon with dancing and cheering and burnt the former governor in effigy. However, the decline of Spanish Town had already started, accelerated by the decline of the plantation. Anthony Trolley, who visited in 1850, described it as a stricken and eternal, with eternal death. Stricken with eternal death. I suppose that was almost like a curse because it's still decaying, I think. The capital was peacefully removed to Kingston in 1872. With this move, the town lost much of its former grandeur, though it had developed as a busy commercial center for St. Catherine and the surrounding parishes, and the location for modern light industries. So Spanish Town lost its glory, and from what we're reading here, it was all sort of a setup because of curry favor. You know, somebody had favor in the right, new people in the right places, and for political reasons had the capital moved. So here's my sidebar again. You know, this getting favors because, you know, people in the right places is as old as time. And I suppose, you know, it will always go on. It's not necessarily right, but I suppose it's just part of the psyche. Because that's what intrigues me about history. There is so much that went on then that is still going on now. And like the humans we are, a lot of times we still tend to be appalled that it's happening. But here, way back, people in high places knew how to get what they wanted done by knowing the right people. So, with that said, folks, I am really, really amused and, as usual, always excited to share with you. I hope you have enjoyed the little tidbits as much as I have, and I hope you will find some nugget of wisdom, of encouragement to pursue your passion or whatever it is that you are striving to do. And I do hope that you will continue to join us each Wednesday at 8 o'clock where we celebrate, enlighten, and preserve by being here together. And I do hope that we will continue to have some more participation. So with that said, I am going to bid you good night. And as always, you know, we have the independence coming up shortly. And I'm sure in almost every city, perhaps in the entire world, but I know in North America, parts of Canada, England, the United States, several islands, there will be wonderful celebrations going on. And I'd like to take this opportunity to announce to our listeners here in Atlanta that there is a weekend of activities coming up. So if you would get in touch with your leaders in your community. There's lots of information about a book signing that will be on, I think, Wednesday and Sunday by a very prominent Jamaican author who has written a book. I think it's her first book, but she is quite an important advocate for youth. And here in Atlanta, we're having a book signing this coming Wednesday. And if you will bear with me while I get the information, I'll share it with you. There's also going to be, Independence Balls being held all over on, I think it's next Saturday. No, next Sunday. I'm not sure. I'm quite not sure. If I can get to the email in time and you'll bear with me, I'll be more than happy to share it with you. I got a flyer on the activities here in Atlanta. And I'm sure, regardless of the city you live, if you get in touch with the Consulate General of your city, I'm sure there'll be a lot of information if you don't already know what's going on for the Independence celebration. And this is the 49th year, and all of the officials are getting ready to for the big 5-0, which of course will be next year this time. And there's planning early, so I will ask you to get involved. And there's always something that you can do for your country if you so desire. So let me see if I can get to the press release here in a minute and share it with you about the activities that's coming up here in Atlanta. So, you know, I'm a senior, and I am just faking all of this high-tech thingy. So sometimes it overpowers me. You know, I keep working at being more efficient at it. But I'm telling you, sometimes it is a beer. So hang in there while I retrieve, hopefully, the information to share with you about what's happening here in Atlanta. So let me see. But if I can't get to it, I promise you that just send me an email and I will reply and not finding it at all. And make sure that you have it. So if you would like to know what's going on, and most of the local or the radio stations that support Jamaica would have the information about the coming events this weekend. But here in Atlanta, we start with a service on Sunday, and it's followed by the next week, I think, of celebration. The big party, the ball, the grand ball, I think will be next Saturday night. So I am not able right now to find it. But I do encourage you to get in touch with your consulate general of your city and find out what's going on for the 49th Independence Celebration and get out and celebrate. So with that said, drop me an email and visit our website at www.backyardlabrish.com and leave us a comment and let us know what you'd like us to share or come share with us. So with that said, I'm going to say to my audience, good night and make it a great week. Bye.